Hello, America and other places in the world, but only America is important. Welcome to episode one of Infield Chatter, colon, the AZ Snake Pit podcast, which I'm saying for legal reasons because Infield Chatter seems like it might have already existed before, even though I couldn't find anything when I Googled it. I am Charlie Gibo. I'm better known as Clefo because I'm too lazy to take advantage of the free SB Nation name change. I'm joined by two people tonight. One of them is known as Kishi. Say hi.
Howdy, folks.
And we're also joined by Soko and his child. Say hi.
I can say hi, but Grace can't yet.
Oh, well. Fine. Bootstrap something, something. Anyway, this is our first episode, so bear with us. We're still sort of feeling this out. As evidenced by the just cut portion, you will never hear. Anyway, yesterday was a very momentous day in sports. It's a day, you know, everyone talks about. You hear it all on the social media. I am, of course, talking about the NBA trade deadline. The Phoenix Suns traded away about a third of their roster for other parts. But that's not really the subject of this podcast. For now, we have the sort of minor thing of pitchers and catchers reporting, which begins, to quote, a writer who I can't remember, I can't look up, but I'll credit them later, is the six-week-long dry hump that is spring training.
Wait, we're not talking about Flag Day in Turkmenistan?
Well, why? I mean, there's already like 50 podcasts on the subject, so, you know, why flood the market?
Fair enough.
Dare I Google that phrase? 6 week long dry hump.
This is a PG-13 podcast I have now just decided, so deal with it, folks.
Can you get pregnant due to dry humping?
Is that a Yahoo Answers thing?
Unfortunately, no. It's empowerher.com. Mm-hmm. Or, let's see now. Oh, Reddit wants to ask, what's the deal with dry humping?
Anyway, my question is, can you get pregnant from this podcast?
Anyway, we're recording this on Friday, and you're listening to this on Sunday at the earliest, so that's why we refer to pitchers and catchers reporting as yesterday. Also, if you're listening to us on Sunday, it's my birthday, so you didn't get me anything, and I hate you. Since this is ostensibly a Diamondbacks-related podcast, let's sort of review the offseason a little bit, and, you know, we'll see where that path takes us. Anyway, the biggest thing that happened, it started last season, but carried into the offseason, that Kevin Towers is dead, or fired, or something.
He's dead to us.
Yes.
He was always dead inside.
Yes, yes.
And Kirk Gibson walked like one of the undead out to the mound, so.
Yeah, and in their place, both of those guys' place, as the general manager, we have Dave Stewart, a former pitcher for the A's, Blue Jays, among others, and was briefly an executive for the Blue Jays, I think. That would require me looking something up, but that's way above the pay grade of this podcast. And also in the manager spot is Chip Hale, who has a nice All-American name and was once the Diamondbacks third base coach long, long ago, and was the manager of the 2006 AAA World Champion Tucson Sidewinder, so he has a pedigree there.
Also, but becomes very close to sounding like the most famous pair of squirrels you ever have seen.
Funny story, he was also up for the Rangers manager job, so you can make that pun connection in your head very immediately. Chip and Hale, Rescue Ranger. Anyway,
I have failed my 90s children brethren.
You'll never become a BuzzFeed editor at this
point. No, I'm really not.
We'll start with that, those two big things, and that'll sort of evolve into other discussion, because sure as hell ain't intelligently designed. Am I right, folks? High five me. Anyway, let's start with the hiring of Stewart, and we can go over some of his moves and stuff. So I'll just throw it to Devin. What do you think about Dave Stewart as a person, what he's done so far, that sort of thing? Do you think he likes raisins, et cetera, et cetera?
Dave Stewart, so far from what we've seen from him, I mean, obviously it's hard to tell just from off-season moves what you're going to expect from a general manager, especially when he's not exactly working with the strongest team to maneuver with. I mean, I like some of the moves I saw. I question a few of them. I mean, like, I think that trading Miguel Montero, that one was going to be not had an air of inevitability about it. I like some of the signings he's made. I'm kind of interested to see what we're going to do. I'm kind of glad to see the team making some moves into the international market by signing a couple of Cuban players. I don't know. There's Jeremy Hellickson, which is a whole questionable thing. But I think really what worries me the most, I guess, is the move we haven't seen, i.e. replacing Miguel Montero behind the plate. But I would like to think that Dave Stewart, I think he's a fan of golden raisins, but not like regular raisins. That's just the impression I get off of him. So
that's racist.
And speaking of the impression that I get, speaking of 90s things, okay, that's a good take, especially on raisins. You know, Dave Stewart, he does what he does that way. What do you think, Soko, about all the Dave Stewart hubbub? Yeah.
Generally, I think it went fairly well. Probably the only thing that I was a little bit questioning was the Wade Miley trade, but that's more just because he's fairly young, and then the Red Sox turned around and re-signed him to a very friendly deal, very team-friendly deal. So that felt a bit like, well, we could have done that, but I also understand if you're thinking to yourself, well, we just need to get more assets and we're rebuilding, that you can't necessarily wait around with cheap young pitchers like that. At least one, you know, he's by the time that the team might be competing, he might be getting to his peak or beyond his peak. But then you look at the Hellickson trade and you're like, well, maybe that isn't really our plan, because he's also that sort of still young, fairly young, but he's had a couple years under his belt, and will be heading towards free agency, I think, in 2 years.
Sounds about right.
So, but generally speaking, I mean, I don't have the same dislike of him that some people seemingly do. Mainly because I take everything he says at face value. I think part of it is just, I think people want to read into everything he says, and not him specifically, but anything anyone says to build it into something larger. Like if they talk about that they want to build an analytics department, well, that must mean that we didn't have an analytics department before. Well, not necessarily. It could mean that they're hoping to make more, or that, you know, they want better people in the position, or many myriad of things. Or the way that Tony La Russa said that, you know, analytics stops when you get to the dugout. And he could have meant a whole wide variety of things, but people are just assuming, well, it means one thing and one thing only.
Yeah, I think my take is that, yeah, it's fine. It's hard to judge anything really at this point. I think the Hellickson deal is a bit eye-raising because it's so much different than any of the other deals, because all the other deals had a sort of long-term either salary relief or prospects or something like that in mind, whereas you're getting this guy who had a really lucky rookie season, kind of, sort of, and then sort of fell off. And who was the last guy the Diamondbacks traded for who had one really good season but then fell off the face of the earth?
Gonzo.
I was going to say Randy Johnson.
Randy Johnson, 2007, you mean? Or what year was it?
He did fall off the earth, at least into hell, i.e. playing for the Yankees and the Giants. Right. So.
Yes.
But then he returned as Randy Johnson the White.
Oh, yes.
That's racist.
Randy's not white. He's clear. That's probably not the first or last time I'll quote Space Jam on this podcast. Anyway, but let's take some of the things that happen to move sort of piece by piece. We'll start with the Hellickson deal. Like I said, it's sort of weird that they did that, trade away two fairly young guys, but sort of high upside. And again, prospects, blah, blah, blah. They might not pan out, whatever. But like I said, just in the light of all the other moves, it seems weird, especially since he's not Jeremy Hellickson, he's Jeremy Purgatory-ixon, am I right?
Nah, probably not. No.
I hate you guys so much.
Look, we laughed at Chip and Hale Rescue Rangers.
I'm not Catholic, so that joke's not going to play to me.
Yeah, the Hellickson deal, it was the first major deal I could be remembering wrong. That happened in the offseason. Do you guys have any other thoughts on it, or do I have the definitive take?
I guess if I have to take a take, and it's going to be really sort of middle of the road, is that I can only presume that the front office looked at Helix and maybe even the coaching staff said, okay, we can identify something that maybe we can fix. And the cost of acquiring him didn't exceed the potential value they get out of making whatever that fix was and then getting 2 years or even potentially being able to re-sign him. So I don't think it's such a big deal breaker that...
Oh no, I don't think it's like going to...
I mean, it's nothing to scream your head at.
Oh yeah, it's not
going to raise...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a franchise record by any means. It's just, like I said, it's sort of puzzling that that happened with, and that's a strategy with, you know, the other trades that happened. And we'll quickly get into those. Let's talk Wade Miley to the Red Sox for a few things, most notably Alan Webster and Ruby De La Rosa. And for a while, the Diamondbacks had 3/4 of all the De La Rosas in Major League Baseball until they dropped Yuri, which is a sad, sad day. But what's your guys' take on that trade?
I think I feel like that trade is, like you kind of referenced earlier, it's especially confusing in comparison to the Helixson one. I mean, I don't feel like and the re-signing with the Red Sox. Unless that was something the team had spoken to Wade Miley about, and he had made it clear he was not interested in coming back to the Diamondbacks, I wonder.
Well, there was that report that came out that apparently the team wanted Miley to adopt a gluten-free diet, which I don't mean to go off on a rant here, I say doing a bad Dennis Miller impression, but unless you have celiac disease, don't bother with the gluten-free stuff.
Yeah, the whole gluten-free diet just seemed more than a little ridiculous. I didn't know if that was just a rumor or, I don't know, if somebody had gotten drunk in a bar and was like, hey, I wonder what the funniest, most completely inaccurate thing I can get past a sports reporter is.
What was it even sourced like? It wasn't like they named names. It wasn't even anything that made it seem like someone who was particularly connected. Certainly could have been.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess this
also,
will...
I was going to say also, really, Wade Miley seems much more likely to go on a paleo diet where he will actually literally go out into the woods and kill his own food.
Right.
And woolly mammoths, too. Somehow we found them.
And normally with a gluten-free diet, you know, they're going to emphasize proteins and things like that. You would think Uber Hunter Wade Miley would be interested in something like that. But, I mean, this kind of... just goes back to my general disinterest with the way sports media and media in general run themselves. And it's not like it's something new. I'm not going to pretend like, oh, back in my day, everything was wonderful.
Well, I'm just saying, back in my day, nobody was complaining about getting traded because of gluten-free diets. That was nobody even brought that
true.
Up.
That's probably literally the first time in the history of MLB that has happened. Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
But you hear a rumor like that, someone writes a story about it, and then everyone runs with it, and they just, because it already fits with the way that they think about the Diamondbacks front office or the people who run the team, that they just assume, well, it must be true. Or at least it's true enough. It fits my general thinking of him. The same way when Dave Stewart says something to the effect of, well, I need to learn more about analytics. And then people just kind of, well, you know, that makes sense. This guy's probably dumb as a rock.
Yeah, I think the whole grit joke being buried into the ground with a friggin' hammer has not subsided yet. Even with, you know, Kevin Towers getting 86th. But, you know, it's the internet. People will hammer at a joke until it's not funny anymore and then hammer at it some more, just like Chip and Hale's Rescue Rangers.
It will probably be brought up at least 5 more times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. The Miley thing, it's kind of what you said. It is sort of asset collection, and if either of the guys got, you know, collectively or individually are sort of worth more in the long run than Miley would be, you know, cost, benefit, et cetera wise, then, you know, why not? And it does seem like that just taking a swing, haha, baseball term, on a couple of guys and just, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. I guess if you're going to take one or the other, it's fine. And this is where I understand when people get frustrated with the Diamondbacks offseason. Because if you take the Wade Miley trade by itself, then fine. That's the direction they're going. They're wanting to get young guys in, see what happens. You know, Wade Miley's not a bad pitcher, but get in two guys who either one or both may develop into something nice. But then the Jeremy Hellickson trade is on the exact opposite end of that. So it's like they wanted to do both, and they hadn't yet committed to either path. Though, if I recall, the Hellickson trade was the first one before they traded Wade Miley, before they traded Montero. So it could have been like, well, this is an opportunity, let's take it. And then after that, they're like, okay, we're just going to go get as much pieces as we can. Mm-hmm. So that way we can line them up and hope that a friendly extraterrestrial will follow me home. And make it so that the bullies won't beat me up anymore.
It's okay. It's okay. They're not going to hurt you anymore. Much.
They're just going to make fun of you on the internet. Sorry, dude.
Yeah. You got to know what's coming.
It's a living.
I feel like the Hellickson trade by itself does almost kind of feel like it's a reconstruction, basically, almost. Basically seeing if he can get back to the, you know, to his first two seasons. I mean, he is making like $2 million less a year, $2 million less this year. I mean, I guess he's only signed for 1 year. Then Wade Miley would be getting with the contract he signed.
Maybe Dave Stewart made a bet with someone else, like, I don't know, O'Dowd or something like that, where he looked at Hellickson and he was like, I bet I could turn him into a proper pitcher.
That way I thought you were going to say he was trying to turn him into a proper speaking Englishman.
Well, that was the direction I was going with, but thanks for undercutting it.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to try and build into a My Fair Lady joke. You just cut me off at the knees.
We're still working out the bugs. Yeah,
so. It's okay.
But it would be quite lovely if Hellickson does turn into a decent piece. But the sort of reference I was making before, like, oh, trying to get a bounce back pitcher who had one good year, I was referring to Trevor Cahill, which obviously two different pitchers. But unless one of the two guys traded away becomes like a huge superstar and like becomes the Rays' first Hall of Famer and like breaks all home run records and fathers a brood of handsome, super strong children, it's probably going to be okay.
That seems like a very specific scenario.
Exactly. That's my point. It's not ideal, but it's probably nothing to get upset about.
No, I mean, and Hellickson at least does have, I mean, if you look at two bad years out of Hellickson, there are at least some medical reasons behind it.
And
so
he has the basic characteristics to be a pitcher. You know, he has at least one arm to throw the ball. He can hold the ball. He can see generally well enough to know where
Unlike Brandon Webb.
Unlike Brandon Webb, yeah.
Too soon.
Assumedly, he is okay with not eating gluten, at least during the year and during team activities. Mm-hmm. So, you know. He's got the basics down, at least.
Yeah. And maybe he can turn into Jeremy Hevin-Dixon. No? Okay. Let's move on. The next big thing that happened I want to cover is, look at my phone. Okay, I want to cover the quite unexpected signing of a Cuban slugger, Yasmani Tomas. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I actually haven't heard his name said out loud ever because I don't have MLB Network. But yeah, the Diamondbacks signed him to a 6-year deal with an option after 4 or something like that. And again, for a team that didn't really make much of a splash on the international market ever, it was quite unexpected. Now, where he's going to fit in with the team and how he'll work out, that still remains to be said. But I'll just throw in my take here that I had at the beginning. That's the signing that definitely showed me a shift in front office philosophy, because it's very risky, but very high reward. AKA the sort of thing Kevin Towers would never do. Ever. Not once. Not ever. Because he's a butthead.
He smells bad.
He's bad and he should feel bad.
His teeth smell.
Yeah.
You can dislike the moves that the Diamondbacks have made this offseason, you know, because they've been inconsistent or they haven't gone for the kind of guys you like or they've gotten rid of guys that you like. You can dislike the way maybe Dave Stewart or Tony La Russa talk, you know, about how adding analytics, but analytics only has its place in the corner with baby. But I would say, generally speaking, what excites me about it is exactly what Clifo just said, which is that it's a move that you didn't expect and one that, to be frank, I had kind of given up hope that the Diamondbacks would be able to pursue. Like most Arizona teams, we're not really the destination, even when we're good or have the pieces to be good and the money to throw at somebody and say, hey, join our young, good team with two good point guards. So it's nice when something happens. And maybe Yasmani Tomas does not work out. Maybe he only is a pretty good player. Or maybe he becomes a great player, but he opts out after 4 years and then has a bunch of great years somewhere else, and people remember him as, God forbid, a Dodger or something like that.
Yeah.
But it does signal that this front office and Dave Stewart is able, not just willing, but is able to get the guys that you didn't think you were able to get. Like last year when they were pursuing Tanaka, even though we were supposedly one of the finalists, I never really believed it was going to happen or that it was we had any real chance. And so, again, this year you hear about, oh, everybody wants to go after Tomas. Everybody wants Tomas. Yeah, we have interest. Who cares? We have interest in everybody every year. Of course we want to get good players. And then it actually happened. It was like, whoa, okay. Maybe I could learn to love again.
Yeah, no, I was pretty excited to – I mean, it did kind of really catch me off guard when we actually signed him because what players coming to Arizona?
What? Really?
He obviously hasn't been here.
I know. I'm concerned. But I would like to start my campaign now to argue that Yasmani Tomas is the best Cuban baseball player in the National League West.
I think he's the best I think he's the best Cuban player in the National League West who will probably play right field, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can dispute that. No, I mean, I'm just really excited to see what he can do. I'm really excited, like you guys said, for what this means for the team. It is a definite shift, and I mean, he's supposed to be a big power guy, and if only we had like a stadium that played pretty well for hitters. Hmm. Oh wait,
dun dun dun.
Yeah, so I think it'll be really fun to get to play him, get to see him play, and just kind of learn what he can do as the season goes on.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm excited too, just because, you know, it's a shiny new toy. But the thing with Tomas is he'll be able to play outfield or third base. If he plays third base, that means Jake Lamb's on the bench, and we've got good old Mr. Mark Trumbo still in the outfield. And that sort of gets me to a move they didn't make, but maybe should have, in my opinion. Mark Trumbo is still on the team, on a National League team, which means there's no DH. That's, I guess, maybe not surprising to me, but considering how the offseason was going, it seemed like a possibility.
Yeah, it was certainly a move I had hoped to see, because I don't really want another season of watching what Mark Trumbo jokingly refers to as defense. He says, thinking back to a certain play in Australia.
Can we also talk about, it's been a year, but I'm still pissed off. I stayed up till 3 in the morning to watch that.
I would just like to say, that statement from Clevo was not edited. That was, he like censored his own profanity there. It was pretty impressive to listen to. Yeah, that was just that.
I'm just curious to see what his strat card looks like for this for last year's. What is his defensive rating? He's got to be like a 5 outfielder and E28 or something like that.
He's like a he's a J outfielder. It's they had to create a new scale.
They moved off the numbers and into letters.
You roll a D20 to see what his fielding score is. You check the chart and it just says I'm sorry.
It's just I'm sorry 20 times in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's just a giant frowny face emoticon right at the bottom.
Yeah, to play his defense, you actually have to then set aside the game of Stratomatic Baseball and play the D&D module Tomb of Horrors.
That sound you heard was a lot of things flying over people's heads.
We aim our humor at a very specific audience. It is actually the three people who are in this podcast, so anything else, and yeah. If anybody gets it, that's just great. It's all gravy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it feels like if you were to field a team with an outfield of Tomas, Pollock, Peralta, as the D may arise, and then your infield is Lamb, Owings, Hill, Goldschmidt, and then you have the Dark Carnival of the Soul at catcher. We'll talk about that in a second. That's not terrible offensively or defensively. It's, you know, it's not going to wow anyone overly, but it's not the weakest unit on the team.
It's not a lineup that you look at and think this is going to win the World Series, but it's a lineup that I think you look at and you're at least I feel like there's some excitement to see. Let's see what these guys can do.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, there's still some old parts like Aaron Hill there, but, you know, sometimes things aren't ideal, and you deal with it. But, you know, Trumbo is just, he's just not very good defensively at anywhere other than first base. And you're not putting out first base because, yeah, you've got, like, probably the best first baseman in the National League at that place already, so... Yeah.
Here's the best worst idea, and it kind of kills two birds with one stone. Yay. How hard would it be to teach him to play catcher?
It's not that hard. Tell him, Wash. But
I mean, I think like most of what you're doing is just like about half the job is just throwing the baseball back to the pitcher, right?
Yeah, and there's other stuff, but whatever. Yeah, let's do it. Someone get Chip Hale on the phone and just, like, say, hey, you know what you could do? And then he'll go, what? What can you do?
And we'll be like, you can put Trumbo at catcher, and he'll be like, oh, hell no.
And I think at that point, actually, he would then start trying to stretch out the call so they could trace it back to you and
he's
send
like
the police.
He's, like, glancing over at his shoulder, kind of, like, rotating his finger, like, hurry up, this kid. Hurry up. You got a read on it? Good. All right.
So the lesson here, folks, if you call Chip Hale, get a burner phone. I think that's what we're talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, no, definitely. Though for a second there, I thought you said get a burner phone, and I was so excited.
it's like a football phone, but it's a burger.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a cheeseburger phone. I mean, usually those are a little more expensive, but... Worth it.
But sometimes you just need to treat yourself.
Treat yourself. But yeah, Trumbo, I mean, I'm down on him a lot, but he has value as like a DH type. That's, you know,
has value in that he could probably fill Baxter's suit fairly well.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
Wow.
Hot take.
But he has value in that he could probably be the Knights Guardsman for the Baxter suit room.
He has value in that he has never been pulled over for drunk driving with the Baxter uniform in the backseat of his car.
Yet.
Or on his lap.
There had to be some AL team out there, you know, who just wanted, like, 25 home runs a year and nothing else. But I think it's just... He's sort of the odd man out with how the roster is constructed, I think. And considering what we gave up to get him, not to beat that dead horse, it just seems, I don't know, that whole thing is just a cluster F that, oh, maybe it'll work out. Maybe Trumbo will hit, I don't know, a 290 OBP? Oh, wouldn't that be something?
Well, I do understand to a certain extent why they wouldn't want to move him, because he probably had virtually no value. During the off season, this last off season.
That is true.
That's true.
So you really don't have a whole lot to lose by simply trying again and seeing if maybe that injury that derailed his first part of his season doesn't happen again. Yeah, he's not going to hit for average. He's going to have a ton of strikeouts. And it looks like he just looked at Medusa. That's how well he plays the outfield. But otherwise, you might as well give him a shot, because if he fails again, then you still aren't going to get any real value out of him. And you may still have to cut him or do something, but it's worth a shot, and it's not like we're competing anyway, so let's do it.
I think also the value that Mark Trumbo brings to the team at the moment is looking at the outfield and thinking, oh, God, we've still got Mark Trumbo. Kind of distracts us all from the other thought of, we still have Cody Ross, correct?
Hail yeah. Satan!
Hail Satan!
But Cody Ross is not going to be an everyday player. I think everyone's agreed
unless
on that.
Unless the Dark Lord wills it.
But we already got rid of Kevin Towers, so...
Wah, wah.
It's a good thing you didn't make a Dave Stewart show, because then that probably would veer into some sort of racist territory.
Anyway, moving on. I think that's a great place to curtail that discussion. Ha ha. I mentioned the catchy position being a dark carnival of the soul.
I believe it's actually the next season of American Horror Story.
American Horror Story, Diamondback's Catcher. Starring Kathy Bates as Tuffy Ghostwitch.
Wait, I really want to watch this now.
The Diamondbacks jettisoned Miguel Montero to the Cubs in what was basically a salary dump, and got a bunch of pieces that may or may not work out, but are a long ways away. But that means that the longest tenured Diamondback is not Miguel Montero anymore. It is now actually Daniel Hudson, who didn't pitch for 2 years. So that's just sort of where the team is at right now. But, yeah, your thoughts on the Montero trade and maybe his legacy or not. This is America. Do what you want.
Well, I guess the big question we all want to know is, who's taking over the Taco Bell Tacos promotion?
Yeah.
I don't think you want to go in and order them Tuffy style. Is that like they've been cooked twice as long?
Ugh. Cats.
Meow. But no, I mean, I feel like the Montero trade was, I felt like it was inevitable there. I didn't, like, I just had this sense of, yep, that was going to happen when it finally went down. So
one person who's super happy about it is Mrs. Snake Pit, because, oh man, did she hate Miguel Montero.
Wait, why did she hate Miguel Montero? Do we need to get her on the show to find out?
I don't think it was anything like deep rooted. I think it was more she just absolutely hated his really huge swings that he would take, especially on, like, a first pitch. Because every time he would take a swing, she would just be like... And then, you know, fill in your own favorite curse words.
So it'd be like a baby screaming, then curse words.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Just
fill in all of this baby babbling in the background with curse words.
There was a lot of weird Montero... This, like, I guess I never totally got, I mean, yeah, he did, you know, his swing was sometimes, it was sometimes like a Rex Grossman, F it, I'm going to go deep kind of thing, just across sports metaphors. But, you know, he was productive, you know, other than like 2013, he was fairly productive, especially for a catcher. I mean, he wasn't like Mike Piazza at his prime, but he was pretty good. And,
I always liked him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets a chance to play for a team that might be good next year. Or the year before.
He gets to play for a team that I hate.
Cubs could be good next year. You're hilarious, Charlie.
So I guess we should take that Devin is not part of the Church of Northside McFly.
I have done my time in the Cubs orthodoxy.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
Well, yeah, I know Charlie's there. Very good, Henry.
I'm trying.
Yeah, I know. It's not your Charlie.
I'm trying.
I know.
Well, I'm just going to announce, put it out there, ladies, I am single. anyway.
ladies.
Anyway, about Montero and stuff.
But more about the ladies.
It is. Call me. Anyway. So yeah, Montero's gone. I'll say he's going to be on a team that's probably going to be better than the Diamondbacks next year. I think that's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
But again, in his place, we just have this sort of dark void. It's like, oh, Tuffy Ghostwitch. Yeah, he's fine defensively, but there's a reason that he spent, I don't remember the exact number of years, in the minors before he got a call-up, because, you know, can't hit. And then the other options are Oscar Hernandez, a Rule 5 pick for the Rays, who also couldn't hit an A-ball, so that's fun. You have Gerald Laird, who's an old, weird-looking guy, to a minor league deal. And I think the reason for all this is because they're really hanging their hat on Peter O'Brien, who, as you may recall, was received from the Yankees in the Martin Prado deal, who could hit pretty well, but apparently can't field. But then again, if you could hit pretty well, like really, really well at catcher, that might offset some
because, you know, hitting catchers are not super common. As long as you're not so bad behind the plate that it just becomes untenable. But there's a reason why guys like A.J. Pruszynski can kind of stick around for a while. Not that he was the worst defensive player, but most of his value was going to be in his bat and also punching trainers in the balls.
And getting punched in the face by other catchers, of course.
Yes.
Those are both really underserved. Like, those are not the markets that people really look for in a player. So
right.
Like,
if money ball.
New money ball.
Yeah, like if you excel at that, then you're going to be recognized.
If you can find catchers that would play very good wrestling heels.
It does seem like it's going to be not pretty behind the plate in 2015, but again, you're kind of punting on the season anyway, so.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean I want to suffer through that terrible catchers in the backfield and like a black hole of offense out of them. I mean, we already have pitchers batting. We don't need
We don't need Tuffy's batting, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think we would understand if we had the pitcher batting eighth and Tuffy batting ninth.
Well, Tony La Russa is around, so.
Exactly. Or we could have a pitcher being the catcher and then another pitcher pitching, and we would still probably get better offense.
You just blow my mind, man.
Probably.
What we should do, though, is set up some sort of horrible scientific experiment where we graft, say, Tuffy Ghostwitch with Peter O'Brien.
Why must we play God? Why must man do this?
Because it's fun.
Fair enough. I think just moving on, the last thing, I sort of mentioned it at the start, and it was like one of the only questions we got that was actually related from the tweeters. What are your expectations for Chip Hale as manager, other than, you know, the Rescue Rangers pod? He did, after all, go to the best university located in Pima County, Arizona.
He went to Pima Community College?
I said university, you asked.
Oh, sorry. He went to
University
of Phoenix?
Went to University High School?
Oh, yeah, that's a thing.
My main hope, my main goal for Chip Hale this season is that we won't run into Don Quixote, because otherwise he will get cut down.
I see what you did there.
Deep cut.
I'm not going to explain the if you don't get that reference, I'm not going to explain it. So,
well,
basically, we're establishing our podcast right now where it's going to be full of references that only like we're going to get. So I apologize.
I say our audience is a little smarter than that.
I fully expect after the podcast to occasionally get texts from my mom asking me to explain references. So,
hi, Devin's mom.
What's up, Chip Hale? You know, he's fine as long as there's no like carryover from the whole some of Gibby's weird proactivities, which may or may not include just throwing at people randomly because I don't know, or grumbling, or I don't know. It's baseball managers are fairly, at least on-field strategy-wise, they always seem fairly the same, so like there's no real advantage. I mean, there's the whole dealing with a bunch of personalities and blah, blah. That's the sort of thing we don't see that's probably underrated as far as managers, but I don't know.
Yeah, if I'm going to give a serious answer, which I suppose I have to after 50 minutes of blabbing on, if he has an advantage with this particular team is that, you know, he does have experience managing younger players, and if they're trying to go a little bit younger and kind of building them up, that maybe he will be able to be a positive influence and build it into something that eventually turns into a winner, even if it's not right away. Whereas, you know, AJ Hinch obviously was never going to do that, even though he was from the development side, but he just never was going to get the players to buy in. It would have been better for him to go down to the minors and manage even for a year or two, get the legitimacy. And then Gibson is probably, you know, much more on the other extreme, old grizzled veteran sort of part of the spectrum. But younger players hopefully will buy into what Chip Hale is selling. Or maybe not. Maybe he'll be a total hard ass. Maybe he'll be a total Nick Saban of the baseball world.
I mean, if nothing else, I think I believe that, you know, with this roster, Chip Hale could definitely have a chance to win another AAA title and another AAA Manager of the Year.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess since they're making him play, like, coach and manage against major league teams, probably not going to do that well. I mean, I agree with what Soko said about how a lot of managers seem the same. A lot of it just seems to be...
That was me.
Oh, was it? All you Arizonans.
Oh, Soko.
All you Arizonans sound alike.
Kisho.
Sorry, continue.
Sorry. No, I feel like they are kind of interchangeable, and they feel like you set the lineup and you know when to swap a, when to pull a pitcher, and that's what a large part of it comes down to. So I mean, I think Chip Hale obviously has the basics down for that, so hopefully, you know, we can just get him to play, you know, manage the team decently and not give us things to complain about. That's basically the most you can ask for from your manager, I think.
Yeah, or hope that he didn't make any sort of agreements that unless they win the pennant, he gets kicked out.
That would not have been wise on his part to accept. Anyway, looking at the time, I think we should wrap this portion up with the preview. I've already decided retroactively that the first episode is reviewing all the off-season transactions. Next episode, we might do a more formal preview. Maybe episode after that, we do a preview of other teams in the NLS. We're kind of just winging it at this point, but that's fine.
I was hoping we could do a formal review next week, and the week after, we do a business casual review.
So was this the black tie review? Because
I think this was Casual Friday.
Casual Friday, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Casual Friday. What? So I think that's a good place to wrap up. Again, this is our first episode. There's probably some weirdness, but we're still figuring this out. And hopefully, if you enjoy it, leave some comments wherever you can. Leave comments about this, which is probably a comment section of some sort.
Feel free to text me to explain any inside jokes you didn't get if you have my number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, feel free to call me when you hear this, even though, again, this is dropped Sunday, and by the time it drops, I'll probably be kind of drunk, which might be entertaining.
Don't forget to follow AZ Snake Pit on Twitter and Facebook, and look for AZ Snake Pit at farmersonly.com.
Right. And remember, the AZ Snake Pit LARPing event is going on next weekend, February 28th.
Foam swords not included. Please bring your own.
Yeah.
Nerf weaponry will be allowed, though, as long as you don't use it melee, except for, like, the stuff that's meant to be used. That. What I'm saying is we don't want another incident where you pistol whip somebody with a Nerf gun, Jim McLennan.
AZSnakePit.com is part of SBNation.com. Go there often. You can follow AZ Snake Pit on Twitter, at AZ Snake Pit. Simple enough. Be sure to like AZ Snake Pit on Facebook. Or you could not do all those things. I'm not your dad. I don't care what that paternity test said. Go away.
Hey, I got a question.
I might answer it.
What's that clicking sound in the background?
Hell if I know.
Now it's not there. It just sounds like someone's, like, playing with some. I don't know.
No, I don't know.
We'll cut that.
Yeah, I know. I just figured I'd better bring it up early just in case it was something that could easily be changed.
Yeah, are you hearing it when one of us is talking or both of us?
It felt like when both of you were talking.
Oh, weird.
And it almost sounded like someone. It was like, it sounded, you know those Leatherman knives?
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like someone was just kind of flicking one of those open and then closing it and then flicking it open.
Weird. Is there a serial killer in the podcast? Is that what you're implying?
There might be a serial killer inside the podcast right now. And he is going to fix everything before he kills me.
Well, it seems to be... Well, it's funny, because I do have a Leatherman jewel, but it's all the way over on my bookcase, so...
Holy crap.
It's sentient.
It is like a Boy Scout ghost. He's going to tie a knot in every rope and every string he can find.